So thanks for that, Pranachandra. It's nice to be back. And you okay there, Anita?
Yeah, I'm going to stand back.
Oh, okay, okay. Right.
I sit down.
Okay. Yeah, so I thought we could meet here because, you know, I am going to give some input, but also I'd like some discussion or some ideas from you. And I thought right at the end, hopefully we'll have a bit of time, just to make it very practical by sitting and reflecting on our practice, actually, of the love mode. Yeah. And, yeah, reflecting when we use sometimes the power mode. So I gave a title some time ago to Hridayachandra for this talk, and what came to my mind was, well, the power of love and the love of power. Yeah, and it's been a theme that I've been interested in for a long time. And just to let you know, in case you're interested, the things that I looked at to prepare for this talk was this little book called The Ten Pillars of Buddhism, which is about the ten precepts. So the precepts that order members commit to when they're ordained. Some of you will know this book. I don't know whether, is it translated into Swedish? No, not yet. And what Bhante Sangharakshita says there about the power mode and the love mode is really very, very good. And he speaks very beautifully about, particularly about the love mode. And I'll quote a little bit from some of the content of that particular part of his paper. And the other thing that I looked at, which might interest you, is a talk that Bhante Sangharakshita gave called Authority and the Individual in the New Society. And that it's on Free Buddhist Audio. Yeah. So I know that these evenings, these Monday evenings, you've been doing ethics, I think. I'm not quite sure where you're up to with that. So I might be repeating some things you've already heard and you know very well, yeah, but maybe I'll be saying them from a different angle. So what I'm interested in is actually us and our everyday life, how we practice. So my own personal interest in the love mode and the power mode, and I'll come on a little bit later to what that really means. But my own personal interest in these two modes of being is partly because I find the message of the Bodhisattva ideal, and I'll come on again to what that means, I just find it very, very moving and very, very profound, this aspect of to constantly exercise, I'm quoting Bhante here, to constantly exercise a spirit of helpfulness and tenderness towards others. To constantly exercise a spirit of helplessness, of helpfulness and tenderness towards the whole world. Yeah, so this is a profound message of the Bodhisattva ideal. And actually this idea of helpfulness and tenderness comes from the Bodhicharya Avatara, which is also a very particular text which goes into detail about the Bodhisattva ideal. So another reason why I'm interested in the love mode and the power mode is a growing attraction or a growing intuitive wisdom inside me that happiness and true happiness and true fulfillment lies in my capacity to open myself to others. So to become less egocentric, less occupied with myself. So this word selflessness. Another reason is that I've been involved with NVC, so non-violent communication. I mean, a lot of you will know about it, will have practiced it. I've been involved with NVC for about 10 years. And I'm very grateful to NVC because it's taught me about my own, certainly gross uses of power, but also my very subtle uses of power in my communication. So those times when I use violence, gross and subtle, in my communication. And I don't think I would have got to know about this, actually, had it not been for nonviolent communication. And then, of course, there's Bhante Sangharakshita's own comments on the love and the power mode. And there are quite a few little phrases over the years that I've read or that I've heard him say that stay in my mind. One of them is, he says, the spiritual life is about giving up the advantages of the power mode. And that really strikes me, giving up the advantages of the power mode. And yeah, there's a question there, isn't there? Well, what are advantages if we use the power mode? What do we see as our advantage if we use the power mode? It's a very interesting choice of word. So if you would give up the advantages of the power mode, does that mean there would be advantages in the love mode? But actually, there are no advantages to us in the love mode, because the love mode is an absolutely sheer spiritual quality. So I'll come on to that a bit later, what you may actually be thinking about when you hear this word advantages. So in Buddhism, the love mode is talked about as non-violence. Non-violence. And the word for non-violence in Pali is ahimsa. So it's, Bhante says, it's the most direct and the most important manifestation of the spiritual act of going for refuge. So the most direct and the most important manifestation of the spiritual act of going for refuge is non-violence. And when I read this, it gives me goosebumps. Yeah, my hair stands on end. Or in Germany, they say, my hair stands to mountains. It always makes me laugh. But in English, you say, my hair stands on end. So yeah, it's the most direct. So non-violence is the most direct and most important manifestation of the spiritual act of going for refuge. Bhante says, in the spiritual community, there can be no power, there can be no violence. He also says, power is what we know and exercise most of the time. It's in our environment. Yeah, we're not only victims of it, we're also perpetrators of it. And the one thing that he says, which stays in my mind, is that moving from the power mode to the love mode means a complete change in our centre of gravity. So that ability to cultivate the love mode, move away from the power mode, is a turning about in our orientation. So, yeah, what helps me become aware of whether I'm using the power mode or the love mode? Well, one thing is remembering that in Buddhism, ethics is about intention. What's in my heart? So asking myself this question again and again, what is in my heart when I act? So body, speech and mind. And another question I ask myself is, what is the nature of the relationship with that person? How do I see myself How do I see them? Am I open to them? Am I open to them? Do I want to have a connection with them? A simple connection. Maybe I don't feel any strong well-being with another person, but am I open to just keeping a connection with them? So what's my relationship with that other person? Do I want to be open to them? Do I want to have a connection? Or do I actually just want to get the better of them? Do I want to compete with them? And sometimes I notice that I often rationalise. I often want to get the better of somebody, but my head is telling me...
Sorry, what does that mean?
Get the better of them. What do you think it means?
Get the best out of them, or use them, or...
Use them would be a good word, yeah. Any other words? Use them. Exploit. Anybody got any other words?
Get the upper hand.
Get the upper hand. Advantage. Use them to your advantage. Yeah. Everybody understand that? Or get a sense, getting the better of them. It means sort of, yeah, using them. That word, exploiting them. Yeah. So sometimes I can rationalise that I'm doing something for somebody else's well-being. Well, actually, all I'm doing is doing something for my own advantage. Yeah? Using somebody else for my own advantage. And I think in any communication, if I observe myself, I can move between love mode and power mode. I think it's very subtle. Sometimes it's not very subtle. Sometimes it's very gross. But actually, I think it's also very subtle, and we shouldn't forget that. That at every moment when we're in communication with another human being, there's the potential to have our ego threatened by that person in some way or another. And then we grab on to securities. And one way we grab on to securities is to try and exploit that other person so that we seem bigger, they seem smaller. So in communication, you know, we just need to think about our own communications. How often do we try to, convince ourselves that we're right, they're wrong. I'm good, they're bad. Yeah? I'm better, they're worse. I know more, they know less. I have more authority, they have less authority. So all the time we're giving up, we're sort of trying to expand our ego so that we're the one who comes out best out of this. So all these, what I've just talked about, are all these are aspects of the poem power mode. Keeping ourselves big, yeah, like this big blown-up balloon, and trying to let the air out of the other balloon. Yeah. And we're always fixing ourselves in terms of the other. This is who I am. This is what I am. This is where I am. This is how I am. So we're always fixing ourselves in terms of the other. So there's always some sort of identity playing a part in our communication with others. And probably I don't need to say very much about this. I'm assuming that this is what I experience. I'm assuming this is what other people also experience to a greater or lesser degree. So, yeah, okay, so let's have a look what is the love mode. Bhante Sangharakshita, in this book about the 10 precepts, he talks about the golden rule. And he says the golden rule, in the broadest sense, is about not taking life. And I think all of you will know the first precept. Yeah. So I'm coming back directly to the first precept here. not taking life. Life is the most precious thing we have. In terms of our spiritual life, to be able to live, to be able to think, to be able to feel, we have the potential of change. We have the potential of moving towards enlightenment. And we also, in terms of the Bodhisattva ideal, have the possibility of really having an impact, having an effect on others and our environment. So fulfilling the spiritual and material needs of others. So life is precious, incredibly precious, if you think about it. So how do we take life? I'm sure that none of us here goes around killing people. Yeah? All of us are aware that killing people is taking life in the gross sense of that precept. But how do we take life in everyday situations? So how do we negate life? How do we take life away from others? How do we take life away from ourselves? And Bhante talks about love as something which is cherishing, something which is protecting, something which is maturing. It's like the light and the heat of the sun. So love here is a spiritual quality. It's a truth. It's a response to life. And this word love is used so much in our culture, yeah, so much in our everyday life. It's thrown about everywhere. But in the spiritual life, love means non-violence. Non-violence, ahimsa. That's what it means. And often we use love in lots of ways, but we're not aware of the spiritual quality it really means, which is non-violence. And when I was writing this talk, I was reminded about a training that I did many years ago with Marshall Rosenberg. Some of you might know this name. He's the man who really set up or got NVC going. And there were lots of things he said that stay in my mind, but he once got his puppets. You know, he has this jackal and he has this giraffe on his hands, and he gets them to have a communication with one another. And I was fascinated by one little communication he did, and it was the jackal asking the giraffe, "Do you love me? Do you love me?" And the giraffe said, "Not always." And I really like that, because you expected the jackal to say, "Of course I do. Yeah, of course I love you." Not always. When you do that, I love you. When you do that, I don't love you. Yeah. So what's the message there? Yeah. So love is active. Love is expressed. Love is communicated. It's not something that just is there, yeah, as some sort of idea. It's actually action. It's action of body, speech, and mind. It's something that's practiced. It's something that's cultivated. It's not some sort of romantic, static state. Yeah? Love is practiced. Love has to be felt. It has to be communicated. And it has to be felt and communicated as non-violence, as something coming towards you, which is cherishing, which is protecting, which is maturing. So something coming towards you like the light and heat of the sun. So non-violence as a spiritual quality means putting others before ourselves. That's the Bodhisattva ideal, putting others before ourselves. A huge challenge, huge challenge. So the Bodhisattva ideal, you could say, is the ultimate affirmation of the Golden Rule, the ultimate affirmation of life, of non-violence. And there's this lovely quote in this book from Shelley, which I'm sure some of you will know very well, which I think just says it all. So Shelley is a very well-known British poet, and he said, "The great secret of morals is love, or a going out of our own nature, and an identification of ourselves with the beautiful, which exists in thought, action, or person, not our own. A man, to be greatly good, must imagine intensely and comprehensively. He must put himself in the place of another and of many others. The pains and pleasures of his species must become his own." Do you want me to read it again, or read it once more? Okay. The great secret of morals is love, or a going out of our own nature and an identification of ourselves with the beautiful, which exists in thought, action, or person, not our own. A man, to be greatly good, must imagine intensely and comprehensively. He must put himself in the place of another and of many others. The pains and pleasures of his species must become his own. Okay, so what is the power mode? So it's the use of force, violence, coercion, using our body, using our speech, using our mind against someone else, against their wishes, against their interests. Bhante says that to use violence, to use the power mode, is irreligious, so non-spiritual. It's completely non-spiritual. It's a base instinct. And if my relation to others is simply, I assert my ego at the expense of others, and make them smaller, then it's almost like I just want to take away their life. I'm not affirming them, I'm negating them. I'm taking something away from them so that I become bigger, more important, they become smaller. So this is where I wanted to ask you for your own examples. So I just wanted to ask you, what ways do you think we use the power mode in our everyday lives? You know, what are the things that come to your mind when you hear the power mode? So you could think about your friends, think about your family, think about your colleagues at work. Think about in the supermarket, in the bus, on the tunnel bana. What ways do we use the power mode?
Well,
criticizing.
Yeah, criticizing. So, yeah. How would that? How's that the paranoid? What's happening there? You're right. Criticizing, backbiting.
Be superior to the person.
Yeah.
If they don't look like you want them to look.
Yeah. So you're getting some advantage, aren't you? There's some advantage to you about criticizing that person. So it gives you something, yeah? Maybe a sense of security, maybe you feel better. Your ego expands, the balloon expands. Yeah. Anything else?
Wanting my things my way. In the community, for instance.
Yeah.
Small ways, big ways. Clean on the sink and stuff.
Yeah.
If people leave things, I tell them.
Yeah.
Because I want it.
Yeah. So the wanting is okay, and maybe there's a way of communicating that. You know, it might be important to us that the things are clean, left clean, but it's actually how we communicate that, whether we use the power mode to communicate that. You must do this. I have the right way of doing it, you have the wrong way of doing it, or whether you can communicate that same thing using the love mode. Yeah.
The difficulty becomes when I get irritated because they do that, and then I...
Yeah.
A power.
Yeah. So there's a bit of the bullying. The bully comes in. Yeah.
Is the power mode always wrong?
It's a good question. We'll come on to that. I was looking at the moment just for things in our everyday lives where there is that element of violence, that element of coercion.
What is good coercion?
Coercion means you're forcing somebody to do something.
Yeah. Well, I'm reflecting lately about this comparing thing, compare with others. Most of that leads to a negative state, like envy or...
Yeah. It could do. I mean, comparison can be a very helpful thing.
But it most leads to separation.
It can, rivalry, competitiveness, So we want to somehow put the other person down because we see them as a threat. Yeah. So we take away, we try to keep them small. So we're taking away from their life in some way, even if it's only in our minds. Mm-hmm.
I think I use the power mode a lot in my work. I work as a teacher, and giving feedback on a student's paper, I have become very aware that I don't use the love mode. I get really irritated, and it feels like they're doing this to harm me.
Yes.
I don't sound that nice when I give feedback.
Right.
Or if in a classroom situation and I know we don't have that much time, and then there's a student that always talks a lot of bullshit. it's very difficult to meet that with a love mode.
I mean that in a way it ties in a little bit with you.
And also is love the love mode always right? That's the same or the opposite question.
To me that is an example of power mode, because what happens then is that I feel that I have the power to define what's right now and to define the situation, and it's like I'm deciding beforehand that what you are going to say, it's an expectation, what you are going to say is not relevant here. Instead of listening, maybe it is.
I mean, I think if you have a job like a teacher, then there's going to be some power mode there, because that's part of your role. It's what you're paid to do.
Yeah.
So there'll be some things which I think are quite clearly the power mode there, because that's your role and responsibility. You know, and talking to many people who are trying to practice, who are in that position. I mean, there are many other positions like that. They're quite aware, they're practicing the power mode. Yeah. I suppose the thing is that your heart, the job will be for you in a way, is to keep your heart sensitive to that the clarity of your roles and responsibilities as teacher, and also your ethical sensitivity to individuals that you're dealing with, you know, and that's holding both things, and that's not easy. It's a huge challenge to do that. So, you know, children expect you to play that role. They expect you to have the power mode. These are grown-ups. Well, also they may also expect that. And if you don't, use the power mode, it could well be that you're not fulfilling their expectations to some extent. So there's like somewhere that fine line between you fulfilling your roles and responsibilities, which you're paid to do, and you're in that job, and also keeping your heart sensitive on an ethical level.
But the interesting question is it possible to be a teacher and not exercising power?
No, it's not. I mean, I've had this discussion with many people.
Yeah.
You're paid to do that. You're paid to give people marks. Yeah. You're paid to give people feedback.
Yeah.
And this is part of life, you know. And there will be other people in the room who equally are paid to do to exercise the power mode in particular ways. So that's part of just having to exist, having to earn our bread in the world. But in a way, the other side of it is keeping that, being aware of that, being aware of the limitations of that. You can't get all starry-eyed and idealistic about it. That's how it is. But at the same time, keeping your not hardening your heart then. Yeah? Not hardening your heart. This is a job I'm doing. This is what I'm paid to do. You know, not getting romantic and idealistic, and this is, you know, like, you know, sort of trying to rise, this is my vocation or something like this. This is my job.
Do you think do you see the power mode in Charatna in order members teaching?
I'm going to come on to that. Good question. I'm going to come on to that. A little bit, anyway. As much as I can this evening. Yeah. But I think, well, if it's okay, can I leave what you said about the love mode and the power mode to the end? Is that right? I mean, I won't be able to say a lot about it, but maybe just touch on it. Because I think there is, you know, I'm talking about the love mode and the power mode, but we live in a real world as well, you know, where it's not always, even the most, well, that's what I'm going to say, the most developed spiritual being will find it really difficult sometimes to bring the love mode into a situation. Is that okay if I leave it to near the end? Is that okay with you? Right. Okay, let's have some other examples of power mode in everyday life. I've got a whole long list here.
As parents, it's like one of my sons asked me, can I have a Coke for breakfast? Yeah. But it depends how I say the no, I think.
Yeah.
If it's from that I'm failed as a mother, then I can get angry.
Yeah.
And tell, like,
yeah.
And I can also say no if I'm in a good shape.
Yeah.
I could say it with care somehow.
Yeah.
But still say the no. Yeah. So it could be power mode or not. Saying that no, I think, but it's not always that easy, or playing the computer, that's the main conflict that he wants to do the love.
Yeah, I mean that.
If it's from failure, it's a power mode, I think, but if it's from care, more, then it could be another tone or voice.
there's the tone. I remember a friend of mine said, you can say yes like this. You can say no like this. No. Yeah. There's a way of saying no with an open hand. So there's definitely ways of saying things. But I think also if you're, I'm not about to coke, I mean cokes aren't too healthy, but let's say a child was about to do something that would obviously really hurt themselves, then you would act with power to prevent that child from hurting themselves. But in your heart is actually their well-being. You're not acting, you might be angry because actually that's your sort of anxiety then created into some sort of anger in the moment, but actually you have a sense of well-being. So you do something immediately with the child, which is perhaps not what they want you to do. So it does depend on intention, what your intention is.
And also if it creates contact, I think, communicating.
Yeah.
If it's with contact or not.
Yeah. So I think that's our striving, that we may not have well-being in our hearts. That may not be there, but there's an openness for contact. Mm. There's an openness for connection. I think with kids it's very difficult, actually. Mm. It's, you know. I'm just looking what I've got. I notice something I do. I don't know whether this is because you're getting old. I don't know what it is. Because I travel a lot and I don't like waiting in queues. I push when I'm in queues. I really do. I don't know whether it's with living in India as well, but I see a space and I go straight for it and everybody has to get out of the way, you know, whether I've got bags, suitcase, rucksack, you know, and I see my advantage and I go for it. And sometimes I rationalise it in my own, well, I'm in a hurry. I can't, you know, I'm in a hurry, my legs hurt, you know, or I feel quite ashamed, you know, that I've just bashed somebody with my suitcase to get in this space. And I was at the airport last night, you know, arriving in Sweden. There were masses of people trying to go out of the exit from having picked up their luggage. Masses of people. And I noticed, you know, I was looking for my own advantage the whole way as I got out there. I didn't care, you know. I didn't care, I was going out. And fast. And I catch myself doing things like that, and I am ashamed. I am ashamed. From time to time, I'm ashamed. So I think I see my competitiveness there. I'm competing with the others, you know. Or to get my space, to get my seat on the bus, or wherever. And I mean, you learn that. If those of you who've been in India, you learn that fast, you know, how to put your elbows out. So there's a sort of rivalry, competitiveness there. I think that's the power mode as well. I think status. I think if you think you've got a status of any sort, you might want to use that to make others feel small. Sex, I think, is another power. I think also we can use our being a woman. I think we can use that to our advantage. I think we can men use being man to their advantage. So I think sex, gender, politics is another way of using the power mode. Manipulating and flattering is another way of using the power mode. Humour, making jokes about somebody is keeping them in a certain space, on a certain level. Yeah. What else have I got? Yeah, backbiting, Birgit has said. Gossip, same sort of area, gossip, criticising, backbiting. I think not paying, sort of travelling on the tunnel barna without paying, cheating your tax on your tax returns, any sort of deception and fraud is power mode.
I thought
Sorry?
Yeah.
Because you're looking for your advantage. I think that helps me actually, looking for my, I'm looking for my advantage in this situation. Silence, withholding the truth, not saying things, is power mode, if it's to your advantage. Bullying, you mentioned that, you know, how that little bit of bullying and bossiness is definitely, you know, sort of frightening people into doing what we want them to do. Giving advice can be the power mode, because if people do what we say, what we tell them to do, or what we advise them to do, then we get something out of it. Anything else?
Maybe withdrawal, not giving up.
Yeah. Playing games, playing those sorts of games. Playing power games, in other words. Yeah, absolutely. Not giving love. Withdrawing your love. Good one. I think when we tell people things as well, without asking, I think, you know, when we start to talk about ourselves without asking the other person whether they want to hear this. Do you want to hear this? You know, we just throw it at them. Yeah, that's also the power of.
Being nice and friendly.
Yeah.
It's like the manipulation.
And many things, what you mentioned there, I mean, how we use the language.
Yeah.
I often say, is it okay if I...
Yeah.
I already assume that it's okay, so...
Yeah.
And
I'm
opening my questions.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be a way of...
So, is it okay if I... It's not an open question, is it? When you said that, it reminded me... You remember when... I'm sure that I've done it as well, because I used to smoke. You know, you'd be putting the cigarette in your mouth and lighting it. Say, would you mind if I smoke? It's the same sort of thing. It's not an open question. There's an implicit expectation behind it. I think I do that a lot. Not so much the cigarettes these days, but the way. Okay. I'm sorry I didn't give you much time to think, but I'm also quite aware of the time. That's why I'd already done my homework, got my list together. I always think, it's interesting how, you know, like if you think back to your life today, since you got up this morning, and you'll have been in contact with family and friends and colleagues maybe. You know, think of an incident where you feel the power mode has come in your direction, and when you've used the power mode today in some way, it's quite interesting. But hopefully we'll have time at the end to just reflect on that. Yeah, okay, so I want to come on now to... you just asked about in the centre. I think I'm aware of how subtle the power mode can be. You know, if I take myself as an order member, I've got lots of different hats. Not so much my work in India, where, you know, I'm a project manager there. But, you know, I'm an order member, I'm a Kalyana Mitra, I'm a private preceptor. I've got all these different hats. And... I've become very, very aware over the years how subtle my use of power mode can be. Yeah, and it's something I really want to become more and more aware of. It actually, it can be very gross as well, but I'm also aware of how subtle it can be. And I think sometimes I notice when I feel over-responsible with these different hats on, I feel a certain pressure, yeah. And that's when I start, I think, to get into the power mode. And what happens is that I stop really seeing the other person. Yeah, I lose a perspective. I stop really seeing the other person. And I get more involved with fulfilling my roles and responsibilities like I think I ought to. You know, I need to be a good order member. I need to be a good Kalyana Mitra. I need to be a good project manager. I need to be a good private preceptor. And when that's happening, what happens is I stop being an individual. And I start being an institution. And I remember Sona, you know Sona, I think most of you know Sona, he once said something to me which was very, very helpful. I think it was just in my process to become a private preceptor, I was talking to him and asking him for some feedback. And he said to me, Kulanandi, if you can't say no, then you're an institution. If you can't say no to, you know, taking on a responsibility, then you're an institution. So, you know, if I take on responsibility, I have to take it on as an individual, not because I think I have to do this, or somebody's making me do this, or... you know, this is, if I take this on, then I'm a good order member. I can only take on responsibility as an individual, as much of me that can be an individual in that moment. And if I don't feel free to say no, then I'm an institution. I find that really, really helpful. Really, really helpful. And Bhante says, in terms of the individual and the group, that using power is group behaviour. Using love is behaving as an individual. So, you know, what happens to us, I think, is because of our background, because of our conditioning, even our religious conditioning, if we have any, is we project onto particular people, probably here at the centre, authority. You know, they're an order member, or they're a mitra, or whatever. We project authority onto them. And at the same time, order members, I don't think they want to do this, but, you know, they're not perfect. And I'm, you know, I can find myself doing that. I start to act from authority. So when that's happening, when the projecting and the acting is happening, then we're a group. Then we're an institution, yeah? We're not seeing each other as individuals. And I think the spiritual community, I think here at the centre, we have a real good opportunity to open that out, to really relate to each other as individuals, just not seeing each other as some sort of member of a group or member of an institution. And I think it's quite a challenge because we want things from people. You know, people want me, things from, or they think, you know, I'm going to give them solutions, I'm going to give them advice, I'm going to give them this and that, you know, because I've got a funny name and a case around my neck. But actually, that's not my job. That's not my job. And my job is simply to be who I am. And to allow the other person to be who they are. So in the spiritual community, there is no authority. I, as an order member, am not representing the order. Yeah, I'm not representing the order. And I'm not even representing Buddhism. I'm just Kulanandi, trying to practice the Dharma. Yeah, and trying to practice within the context of Tri Ratna. I don't represent this centre. I don't represent the order. You look at the order, you know, the 1,500 people, 1,800, I don't know how many are we, 1,800. Every single person different. Yeah? And you could get one person here talking about the love and the power mode, they would say something completely different than me. The core of it would be the same, but the way they would express it would be completely different. So we don't represent anything. So no Mitra represents the Mitra Sangha. No order member represents the order. And I think that's quite a challenge for us, because it throws us back on our own individuality. Yeah, it throws me back. I'm not an institution. I'm just a human being trying to practice the Dharma, and I've committed myself to the order. That's all. And people coming to the centre are thrown back. Yeah, we're just people trying to practice together with others. So I want to just tell you about, to sort of go a little bit deeper into this, I just want to tell you about a situation that I was involved in last year, to see how that sometimes works in our Tri Ratna communities. I think sometimes we get stuck with our ideals. I think sometimes we don't go beyond our ideals and we relate to them. We identify with them. And, yeah, we get into difficulties. So I want to tell you about a situation that I was involved as an order member with some other order members. And we were discussing with a Mitra about her ordination process. And there were three of us, three order members and one Mitra. And we knew each other very well, and the meeting started really well. And we were exploring with this Mitra how she could intensify her practice towards ordination. And then we came to this point where the order members, so we were all women, Dharmacharinis, we were trying to come up with suggestions as to how this Mitra could integrate herself better. There was a bit of a split between her head and her heart. So we were trying to help her come up with suggestions how she could integrate herself. And this is when the meeting started to go badly wrong, because the Mitra became more and more quiet and the Dharmacharinis became more and more energetic, all these suggestions, what this poor Mitra could do. And slowly we realised this wasn't going so well, and we finished the meeting. And afterwards the Mitra said to me, "Oh God, I didn't like that meeting. I felt completely hopeless. Yeah, I came out of the meeting feeling I was a complete hopeless. You know, I couldn't do anything. And so I explored with her what was going on, in this meeting. And I mean, obviously it's very complex what was going on, but the order members wanted to help this Mitra. That was their job, yeah? Order members help Mitras. Okay, so the order members wanted to help the Mitra. The Mitra, her ideal was, I need to be open to the order members. They're going to give me advice. They're going to give me solutions. Yeah. So she was trying to be open to us. And she had, this was her ideal, I need to be open to my order member friends. I need to listen to what they tell me. But what was coming, she couldn't do anything with. She couldn't use what was coming in her direction. So she was open, but she wanted solutions. She wanted advice from us. But actually, we just wanted to investigate something with her. So there were completely different expectations in this meeting. And what happened was that because of her idealism, and because she was expecting the order members to come up with things, she wasn't open to herself. Yeah? She was actually not in touch with a sense of her individuality and her metta for herself. So no wonder she felt awful after the meeting. So she was caught somewhere, and we were caught somewhere. We were trying to do our job as we thought it. Yeah. So I think those situations are really, really interesting, what happens. We weren't open to where that Mitra really was in that moment. And we can only research, we could only research with her if her individuality was alive. And at that moment it wasn't alive. She wasn't alive to herself at that point. And I think that's a very subtle use of violence. It's not that any of us had any intention to use violence at that point, but it was a very subtle use of trying to help somebody who actually wasn't really alive to her own individuality at that point. And I think that's something about our love for ourselves, which is needed. It's part of individuality. If we don't love ourselves, if we are not taking ourselves on board, as it were, then it's very difficult to have individuality. Because individuality means being able to sit in my own skin, being able to be who I am. And I think if individuality is there in us and alive in us, it's hardly it's not so easy for other people to use power over us. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but when we're in touch with ourselves, really in touch with ourselves, it's not easy for other people to use power over us. So I just want to return to intention, looking at the clock. because that brings up a few things that people have said. We've talked about intention, that my intention has to be one of connecting with another human being. Maybe there's not immediate well-wishing there, but there's an openness to connecting. And there are times when we have to step in with the power mode in order to stop someone else harming themselves. And I think the best example is with children. So I think in this book, Banti gives the example, if a child is rushing towards the fire, you would grab it, yeah, which in a sort of quite a violent way, but you would do that in order to save them hurting themselves. Where I think we have to be careful as parents is when we rationalise our power mode. For instance, I can remember some years ago leading a retreat with Indian women, and they were convincing me that they had to beat their children in order for their children to do well at school. You know, give your child a good beating and he'd get good marks, and that would mean he'd get a good job and he'd bring in lots of money for the family. And I argued this with them, backwards and forwards, that actually, if you beat your child and rationalise it in this way, then all you do is you just prolong an attitude of violence. And it just continues from one generation to the next. Yeah, this idea that you have to beat in order for your child to achieve something. So I think we have to be also very careful how we rationalise our use of the power mode. And yeah, what I said earlier, it's very difficult, even for spiritually mature people, to come or even want to come from the love mode, which brings in your point. The power mode is very strong and dominant in our culture, in all cultures. Yeah, in our human relationships, in our human dealings with each other. So you might choose, you might have to choose the power mode in a situation, because actually the love mode is not having any effect, but it's the awareness with which you would do that. Yeah. So for instance, I can remember, I don't know if you remember, everybody, Banti giving a long talk about nuclear disarmament. Yeah, and you know, he advised people to go on marches, go on demonstrations, not pay their taxes, even get thrown into prison, you know, to demonstrate against nuclear arms. So there might be times when we actually choose to use the power mode to have an effect, but it's done with awareness. Yeah? It's not done to rationalise our sense of who we are. Yeah? So I think we shouldn't be idealistic or overly idealistic in this. It's very, very difficult sometimes to practice the love mode. And also, in a situation where there's not much individuality, you might be forced to use the power mode because you're not getting anywhere with the love mode. It's not going anywhere. So the power mode might be the only strategy you have left. So let me see. So, yeah, maybe I could just finish off by saying that in the spiritual community, in this community, there should be no use of the power mode. It should be a place where we can actually quite radically break down the use of the power mode, which we see in our environment, which is in within us, which is all about us. Here, in this centre, we should be really trying to confess our use of the power mode and put into place the use of the love mode. It needs to be that radical. We need to have some context where we can actually have radical love mode being felt and being practiced.